Chapter 7. Toxin, Antitoxin. Like antivenom, the antitoxin treatment could only be given after a child had become infected. The effectiveness of this injection also seemed to depend on it being administered within a tiny window of opportunity once the infection was discovered. Because the fear of serum sickness was so great, most parents would put off a shot until the telltale white patches were easily visible on their child's throat or tongue, a point at which the antitoxin was less effective. Whatever antibodies the horse had created against diphtheria toxins were transferred into a child at time of need in hopes of neutralizing the bacteria's toxin, but the treatment had no ability to prevent the diphtheria infection. The body was still on its own regarding the microbe itself. Harvesting antibodies from horses made purposely sick with diphtheria was a crude affair from which mistakes were inevitable. Occasionally, the amount of antitoxin harvested was less than expected and would prevent the shot from doing anything other than creating serum sickness. Horses had to be tested for tuberculosis and other diseases to ensure they weren't harboring deadly microbes in their blood. Within the same stables, horses were also being used for the production of tetanus antitoxin. Carelessness, blamed on the stable custodian, led to several children dying grisly deaths from the inadvertent injection of tetanus bacteria. A better solution was needed, ideally one that could be used to prevent the infection in the first place. At the time, smallpox would have been the only vaccine children would have received. Rather than horses, it was grown and harvested from the lacerated bellies of calves and administered via a modest scrape on the skin, a process capable of creating its own variant of serum sickness known as vaccinia. In hopes of creating another preventative treatment, scientists were experimenting with ways to inactivate the diphtheria toxin. Treating it with heat could sometimes render the toxin harmless, but they discovered more reliable results were achieved by soaking it in formaldehyde. It might take days, even weeks, but mixing diphtheria toxin with the toxic chemical seemed capable of creating the perfect substance. A broth that once injected would cause the recipient no harm, but could still invoke enough of an immune response that they would be protected from future attacks. Perfecting the process was difficult, as the exact amount of formaldehyde, temperatures, and timing required to produce an effective product seemed to differ on every batch. Because they were dealing not with bacteria, but the invisible toxins they produced, microscopes would offer little help. As a result, thousands of guinea pigs were sacrificed to monitor the painstaking process, an undertaking more art than science. Eventually, they achieved some measure of success and called the result the diphtheria toxoid. As news of the miraculous breakthrough began to surface, people were understandably floored. Scientists had apparently created a solution which could prevent the ravages of diphtheria, the cruel death of thousands of children each year, and possibly eradicate the disease once and for all. The initial excitement faded quickly as the actual effectiveness of the toxoid began to be called into question. Many who had received the shot still came down with horrible cases of the disease, and some got sick from the injection itself. Scientists were not only working blind, but handcuffed as well. The shot could only be tested on guinea pigs. Giving children the shot, then purposefully exposing these human guinea pigs to diphtheria was out of the question. Another simpler approach was tried, one that didn't employ the newly developed toxoid at all. Children would be administered both untreated diphtheria toxin and horse-derived antitoxin at the same time. It seemed like the perfect solution. A tiny amount of isolated diphtheria toxin should trigger a response from the body's immune system, and the shot contained a fair amount of antitoxin harvested from horses to give the child's body protection. If the right balance of toxin to antitoxin could be struck, children should have theoretically been able to develop complete immunity to the diphtheria toxin with very little risk. The competing approaches created confusion. Some doctors were administering the toxoid shot, while others were sure the toxin-antitoxin combination offered better protection. Parents with older children who had experienced serum sickness might have opted for the toxoid injection, as it wasn't grown in animals. Other mothers and fathers might have objected to their children being injected with formaldehyde-containing toxoid and insisted on the toxin-antitoxin version. This battle played out on an admittedly small stage compared to the vaccine debates of today. Many children had never received even the smallpox vaccine, and most mothers would have delivered their children with the aid of a midwife far away from the powders and syringes of a 1900s physician. The ravages of diphtheria were well known and feared, but the promise of a vaccine was but a whisper across the rural countrysides of America. In a few short years, that would change as the world was consumed with the fate of a few children sick with diphtheria and the dogs that helped save them.